Welcome to the Live Awakened podcast, life coaching for women physicians of color. Create more freedom to simply be who you want to be. Do the things that make you feel alive and create a deeper connection with those you love. It's time to choose you. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Guile.
Hello, ladies. Payal here, and we have a special guest. But before I introduce her, I just wanted to acknowledge that we are recording this in the month of May, which is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And I told you guys that I wanted to talk about healing this month. And what better way to talk about healing, especially for my community, the community that I come from, through generational trauma and how it comes up when we talk about culture and family and all the things. So today we have Dr. Kavita. I'm going to let her introduce herself and her background. And I want to tell you guys how I met her. So Kavita is a fellow South Asian woman, which I love. And I was struggling in my marriage, and a friend of mine, I'll just say, Mariela, I love you so much. She's the best. She's the best. She mentioned, so Mariela and I met at US Kaplan course, Emily's, kind of like in Chicago back in the day. And we met up again randomly at a retreat. And so she said, hey, listen, if you want to talk to someone about your marriage and, you know, that relationship, I know the perfect person. And so we connected, and Gavi was like, so like open, and I could connect with her right away. And so ever since then, we've just been these like virtual friends. Maybe one day we'll meet in person. I guess right now she is in California. That's where I live. So please introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you so much. It's bringing back so many memories, so many wonderful memories. I can't believe how much time has passed. But thank you for having me. And yes, my name is Kavita. I am Southeast Asian as well, was raised in Tamil Nadu for majority of my life, and have been in the US now for about 15, 20 years, I guess, something around there. I'm a psychiatrist, and I love, Payal, that you are doing this month focus on AAPI and intergenerational trauma, because that's the reason that I ended up in psychiatry, first of all, to try to make sense of my beginnings, honestly. I remember someone once said, you shouldn't go into psychiatry to fix yourself. But I have to be honest, I went into psychiatry to understand my beginnings and my parents. And it led to a sort of a long, circuitous, as is all of our lives, into what I do now, which is coach mainly physicians, but also other professional women who are balancing sort of busy career and family life. And we've all succeeded in using our capacity to repress and capacity to excel in order to gain acceptance and recognition, even being seen by our parents sometimes for our academic excellence. And so I understand that. I understand that because that's my life. That's what I did as well.
Well, that's how I got into the space too, right?
Yeah.
Because it was like, we're all type A+ students, right? Yeah. Like we want to just do really well. And I talk a lot about this, you know, on my podcast, that a lot of us may be firstborns or like first female. Yeah. So it's like we carry the burden of the world on our shoulders. And we don't know any different because that's all what we've seen, like other women do, right? So this is kind of like I could do this all day long, because I came into coaching because I also wanted to, first it was for me, like I wanted to heal. But then once I healed, and or I'm in the journey of healing, and you don't really arrive. I think there's like this ongoing. That's why at any point I always have two coaches, like my business coach and my personal coach. Yeah. And what I found was like, and this is where I want to get into really the South Asian part, is like, I love my coaches and they got me so far, but there was a certain part of me that I felt like A, they couldn't understand, or I had to over explain because of our family and the culture. And I was born and brought up in LA. So it's a little bit different. You grew up in India and then you came here. So every stage, it's very different. Fascinating fact is I actually went to med school in India against my parents' wishes. And that's a whole different story. And that's why I understand.
Oh,
you didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't. I was in Chennai in India.
Ramachandra?
Yeah, this is funny. You didn't know this?
I don't think I knew that. You went to SRMC? My brother went to SRMC.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting because right now, like, I'm like, why was that part of my journey? Because then I was like, why is this like Guju girl, 17-year-old going to India after being born and brought up and being raised in LA? And my parents were like, we didn't come to America, so you go to India. You know, and they were just like, but I was like, but I have to become a doctor because if I'm not a doctor, I'm a failure.
Tell me about it, man.
And I think, I don't know if you know this, but I'm the first one to complete college in my family. Oh, and so like doctor is a whole different level, which for you, right? It's a different.
It was a different, everywhere I stumbled, everyone was a physician. And in fact, everybody was a physician through, you know, they got their scholarship and blah, blah, blah. So it was almost like, if you don't get this scholarship, it will be a black mark on history forever. And I was, like you mentioned, I'm the firstborn as well. So it was kind of like you're setting up what your siblings are going to expect from life and do in life. And so I completely get that. That's sort of like, yes, we have to succeed. And actually, I often share that my dad once told me, you can be anything you want to be as long as it's a doctor.
Oh, wow. What an option. Because for me, it was, you have three options, doctor, doctor, or doctor.
Oh, well, there you go.
Coming from a family of no one was a physician, right? And so that was kind of the reason I ended up in India, because in California, affirmative action, like I was competing with all my fellow lovely Asian top students, right? And I wasn't a good test taker. And now I understand it had nothing to do with my ability to take tests. I actually have, I call it eye therapy now, because one of my eyes get tired when I read. So it was fascinating. Yeah. Like I figured this out like much later in life, but like I just started doing these exercises and it's like, oh, that makes sense. That's why I don't like to read for pleasure. That's why, like, you know, I would have to study like 10 times more than anyone else to pass my boards. So anyways, I end up in India.
Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating because when I learned about you, Kavita, the part of India, and I'm just going to explain for people who don't know the geography, is like I'm from like the northwest part of India, so near Mumbai. And then I ended up in medical school in the south of India, which different language, like literally it could be two different countries because the way they act there is like they clump everyone into the north or the south.
Yep.
So I show up, I'm like this Cali girl, like who doesn't speak the language, but man, I learned so much about the nuances and intricacies of even within the South Asian cultures, like in Indian cultures, it's different.
It's different. Even within one state, right? Yeah. The dialects are different, but definitely I often say I'm more comfortable traveling within the US than I am traveling within India, because state to state, the language is different. The culture, the food is different. The dress is sometimes, you know, it's very different state to state. Yeah, so I can't even imagine how you must have felt just plopped in there.
You know what? So many times I look back and I'm like, you know, women, I just want to say, guys, when you guys look back at your stories and your journeys, like we underestimate how much we have been through, because sometimes I see some of you guys who come to me and you're like, oh, this is really, it's scary. I've never done this before. And my first thing I say to you guys are like, what are all the things that you've never done before that you've now done in like, that was big. We went through like a lot of education and training. And I mean, it was its own form of like conditioning.
Yes.
Right. Like intern year, guys. I just want to say that. That just was hell.
One word. Back.
Call.
On call. Beeper. Part of the beeper.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what beeper pagers are, like you guys.
You're lucky if you never had to carry on a beeper. I hear the sound of a beeper on a show and I have a reaction.
Me too. I am like, so I did pediatrics. And so it's like PICU was like my least favorite place in the whole entire world, because you don't know what you're going to get. Like I would have full on anxiety. So Anyways, I digress. But this is what I wanted to say. It's like, I went to that part of India. Now I'm like, oh, why do things happen in your life in the past that, you know, you don't understand? Well, now I have so many clients that come to me from that part of the country, like at least their ancestors. And right. I know the difference between each state, each language. I even know I speak some of the languages, which is really fun.
You speak Tamil?
I do. Because I was like, shoot, I'm going to like not have anyone rip me off at the store. So I'm going to learn how to say it.
We'll have to do another show where we try to chat.
Languages?
Yeah.
Like a TikTok reel. But anyways, so that helped me understand. And this is where I want you to like chime in is like, wow, we have a lot of similar generational trauma and also different.
Yes.
Right. Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Even among the people that I coach, I mean, a lot of people from Southeast Asian cultures come to us with their relational struggles. I'm a relationship coach primarily. And I think even among my clients and my story, there are a lot of similarities and a lot of differences. Like, for example, my father, he trained in the UK and he was getting his FRCS and everything. So I spent a portion of my childhood in the UK, which actually changed the way I perceive. When I went back to India, I was in eighth grade when we went back, and I had left when I was in second grade. And I remember when I came back in eighth grade, my view on what can and cannot be said, what can and cannot be dreamt about for your future was different only because I had had an exposure to what was possible. Just not what was possible as in that's the only way to live, but that there are different ways to live. Right. So even within my story, there have been, and I've seen that with everybody who comes, we lump ourselves into, I am, you know, Tamil Brahmin, and this is what we do in Tamil Brahmin. And I'm like, yeah, tell me about your cousins. Oh, well, they seem to have different lives and you have different. Okay. So it's not always the same, but there's a backdrop that needs to be understood in terms of the culture that we come from, because we can't divorce ourselves from that identity as well. We carry pride in that identity as well, right? As well as the trauma, there's also the pride. So you can't just remove that, but you also want to be careful about thinking that that in some way limits you.
Yeah. It's funny because I grew up at a time in LA. So we're talking in the 80s, where the only Indian people in my school were me, my brother, and my sister. And then there was these two other sisters later that we knew of, but like, that's it.
Yeah.
And that was like, I didn't realize it, but it made a difference, you know, to the way that I showed up in the world. And I realized that back then there was like the subconscious assimilation that happened automatically. Like, I didn't want to stand out. You know, one thing that I actually want to say that came up for me, and I was going to share this, you know, this month, was like, I still have this moment. And I remember in sixth grade, I grew up in Eagle Rock. So those of you guys who are from California, you guys know, I was waiting to get back to class and we were lined up outside and it was hot and I wore shorts and like, I was the firstborn. We didn't really like, we learned by just being. And I remember some kids making fun of me. And I still remember this moment. They're like, ooh, gross. You have hairy legs. Right. And the fact that I can tell you like what I was wearing that day, like that trauma of being different. God, like actually right now, if I just check in with my body, I can feel like I'm feeling warmer and like my heart rate's increasing. Mm-hmm. And that moment there, I was like, wow, that changed the way that I like dressed. That changed the way that I like advocated for myself. Cause I was like, I'm not going to be in the swim team if you don't let me shave my legs. And my dad was all about, which I love that about my dad, was like, you're going to play every sport. Like you're not going to be limited,
mm-hmm.
because so we were girl, boy.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. But like he put us in everything. And I know a lot of people didn't have that experience, but my dad is very sporty and plays volleyball. He played until COVID hit like 3 times a week, wow. Volleyball. Awesome. Right, with the Indian uncles. Yeah. So
I know my dad did tennis with the Indian uncles and they had their own sort of like tennis club.
Yeah. And I think it's a social thing for them, but like, I still remember that moment, you know, like this distinguishes how I'm different from the rest of the gals. And I had a ton of Asian friends, like my best friends from high school. And we actually just got together 2 weeks ago. We get together, we talk all the time, like almost every day on Facebook Messenger. And they all live in California. Is like, they were Asian, but different type of Asian. And I have a lot of clients right now who are like, you know, I have clients who are Caucasian, like it doesn't even matter, like a Caucasian, you know, whatever it is. But that for me was like, this is how I'm different.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And it kind of left a mark, like for me, yes. To be like, ah, and it wasn't like, this is how I'm different. I'm proud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because we all want to belong, right? That's such a human need, is to belong. And when you are different in any way, that difference in one location and time can be a source of great pride, and another location and time can be a source of wanting to fit in and wishing you weren't different like that. I, as you said, we were the only brown kids. When we were in the UK, the entire school, there was one kid who was of mixed, her dad, I think, was, I'm forgetting, maybe from the Caribbean, and her mom was from the UK, but there was no one else who was even mixed, and it was just me and my sister. And I still remember I would go in recess and find her, because I was like, somebody might bully her and she's younger, and I would just, we just stand together all through recess. So, my gosh, these things define you, man. Yeah. These things really stick with you.
And now it's so different, right? Like, your daughter is growing up in a different world. My boys are growing up in a different space. And like, I just take a minute and like acknowledge and recognize that we are standing on the backs of the women that came before us.
100%, man. Even my mom and my grandma, who they weren't given the tools. And so they didn't know how to pass on the tools. But even then, with some of the trauma that got passed on as well, even then we stood on their shoulders, because it lightened with every generation.
Yeah, people come, I think, to both of us with like, I don't know how to apply this to my family.
Yeah.
And it's different and it's not going to work because this is how it's been done.
Yep.
But I'm not happy. And there's a part of me that desires something different.
Yes. And there's sometimes a guilt associated with that too. My parents gave me so much, sacrificed so much. And why do I even want this? My sister seems to be, and my, you know, so-and-so seems to be happy with this. And why am I searching for something else? What's wrong with me? And it takes some pausing to recognize that desires are not wrong. They're never wrong. But you can choose whatever you want to do with them, but making desires itself wrong makes us wrong as people.
Yeah. That's so powerful, right? Like, why make yourself wrong?
Yes. Yes.
Because since it's like, first of all, life is hard, right? It's yes. Like you're in society. People are, there's enough judgment and criticism out there. And for me, I feel like the hardest thing I think I have learned is like letting go of my self-judgment and criticism.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. The next step really is like when you go from there to like creating self-compassion, grace, and love.
My gosh, that is quite a journey. I'm still on that journey. Still, the old voice creeps in sometimes. And I try to pause and remind myself that some of those voices are not mine. Mm-hmm. They are remnants of the genetic code that I was given. They're voices from the past, sometimes even beyond my parents. They're voices from my grandparents' generation that has been passed on through the genetic code, right? And so it's not all yours. What you're hearing in your head is not all yours.
Yeah, that's so important to even just acknowledge that, right? And so like some of the work that I do in my space is like, we just start with like, which part is true?
Yes.
And which part is the story?
Yep.
And just acknowledging that I have put things in the true category just because I've taken a story and repeated it millions of times, or it's been repeated.
Yes. It's been repeated with the additional sort of like, this is what honor and loyalty looks like. There's the story and there's the emotion of when you live like this, you have honor and loyalty. So we mix up honor and loyalty with living a certain way instead of seeing that honor and loyalty are emotions and this is a story. They're not the same.
Yeah, but it's so confusing, you know, when you're a child.
Yes.
Like that's all you see, you know, yeah. And I think that it's like we don't even realize subconsciously all that we've taken in.
Yeah.
Just by our observations.
Yes. Yes. Yes, all of it, right? All the good, all the struggles, all the misconceptions, everything is one big blob that we just sort of absorbed and became.
Yeah. It's so freeing. I feel like just unknowing this part and just talking about it, it's like we have two brown women who have very different journeys, right? And we can just name it.
Yes.
Right? Like that's what the power you have live, that it's inside of you, right? Like we don't even understand that we're capable of that. And I think that part of my work and your work, and you could speak for yourself, but is like, first to just be like, yes, it's possible that yeah. you can live in this internal freedom mm-hmm. that you never thought was possible.
Mm-hmm. 100%. One of the things that was a revelation, my own journey was understanding that there are these two primitive needs within me. And one is for authentic self-expression, being who I am as I'm becoming, right? Being and expressing that, but also the primitive need for connection and belonging. And sometimes those end up being in conflict. And when they're in conflict and we are scared, we will, as human beings, always choose connection.
Yes, that's a big part of what I do all the time. Like, it's interesting, like right before we started, I was telling Kavita that I just came out from Zumba and I like have so much awareness and I observe a lot, but like old me, you know, would have seen like the group of people who hang out and be like, why aren't they including me? You know, yeah. I'm nice, I'm friendly, you know, like, why not? And I would spend hours thinking, overthinking, spinning, playing scenarios in my head, yep. right? Today I was like, oh, I am complete without anyone's acceptance.
Yeah.
Right. And when you show up the way you truly want to and who you are, it is more attractive.
Yes. It is magnetic when you actually don't spin into needing someone's validation. It's interesting that it comes more easily.
Yeah.
If you actually don't chase it. It's so interesting when you chase. The definition of chasing is that something is running away from you, mm-hmm. right? So if you're chasing, the other thing is always equidistant running away.
Yeah. I think you once, I don't remember, this has been so long since I met you, but I think you talked about the cat and mouse thing. And I think my therapist did too. Initially, you know, and I did some hardcore therapy. So when I talk to you guys about like therapy versus coaching, I'm like, it's very different. And also it can work together. So I like to put that out there, but she was like, it's a cat and mouse. And I've always been like, you know, running behind everyone and everything in my life. And then when I looked back, there wasn't anyone behind me running after me.
Yeah.
And as women, I just want to say, like, we fill our lives and with doing things for everyone else.
Yes. And getting our sense of identity and meaning and purpose and belonging by serving.
Right. And now we've added your profession, which is about serving probably.
Right. Yes. And we get so good at actually, I remember thinking at one point, oh my gosh, I am constantly scanning the room to see what is that person feeling? What is that person needing? What does that person's facial expression look like? It's constantly like an outward, what do I need to do for other people thing. And it's exhaust. No wonder we're exhausted, right?
Yeah.
It's so much cognitive energy
yeah.
trying to predict other people's needs. And interestingly, it actually, one of my coaches early on said something that really woke me up to that, because there was also this feeling of, yeah, I guess I shouldn't do that, but it's a nice thing to do, isn't it? That's the kind of person I want to be. And so I was always like grappling with that. But one of my early on coaches said to me, this was with regard to, I was talking about something with my younger brother, and she said, is it possible that you're also preventing him from being his full self and finding his expression in the world because you jump in and predict? And that just like blew my mind.
Enabling. That's what comes up.
Yeah. Yes, I never thought about it like that. I thought about it as serving, right?
And then yeah, but that's like, because you've been conditioned to believe that, right?
Yes.
Like, growing up, it was like, girls should. Yeah. So by the way, you guys have heard me say this, should equals could plus shame. It's a formula.
Yep.
Girls should, you know, take care of, have these nurturing characteristics, help out, be seen and but not heard, right? Mm-hmm. And then I want to say, like, boys should seem confident, make decisions, and
they
not
have
show
their
emotion.
Own,
yeah, they're jacked up in their own way, right? Yes. And I mean, but today we focus on the ladies, okay? So guys, it's all good. And I have men come to me too, and they're like, "Yes, like I want your help too," right? Because it's the same kind of conditioning that they have kind of received. It's just apples and oranges.
Yeah, we're all under the yoke of these intergenerational expectations that our parents truly believe keep us safe in the world.
Yeah, so they're doing the best that they can with what they know. And now we have more tools. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of people hesitate to even say yes to themselves in this space because they're like, oh, coaching or this and that, it's going to be hard. But as soon as I say, would you like this to continue in the next generation?
Bam.
No.
No.
That legacy thing is like for real, like such an important thing. I mean, for you can probably, you know, you're even do more mental health kind of stuff. But for me, it's like me being a coach has changed the trajectory of my kids' lives.
Yes. 100%. That's why I started my own healing journey, because I promised myself I knew two things early on, even when I was like 12 or 13, when people asked me what you want to become, I didn't say it, but my number one thing in my head was a parent. I actually wanted to become a parent more than anything else. And so I knew I would always have a child, but I also said to myself, I refuse to pass this on.
So isn't it interesting that we're willing to do it so that we're good parents or we don't pass this on? And it's not a problem, but what I'm hoping, right, that this work does is that we can say yes to ourselves right now, irregardless of the effects of the future. Yes, we know it's going to be helpful, but can you say yes for you?
Yeah.
For this lifetime?
100%. Yes. I've come to realize that your legacy is not just your children or your nonprofit or anything. It's not just that. It's also the future you that you're birthing.
Yeah. So this has been really fascinating. I want to apply this because this is kind of the stuff that you do. It's about talking about this work when it comes to marriage, mm-hmm.
yes.
right? And relationships. So can you talk a little bit about this whole like enabling when it comes to like marriages, and what have you kind of heard and seen?
Yeah. So a lot of what we do, I mean, I'm a relationship coach, and some people come to our program, Heal Your Relationships. Some people come because they may be single and they're looking to heal their relationship. We have somebody that we're helping now heal their relationship with their adult children. Sometimes we've helped people heal their relationship with their mom. But I would say about 75% of the clients that come, they're coming for their primary romantic relationship, whether it's marriage or, you know, a committed relationship. And so in that space, again, we have been taught that you could be even the primary breadwinner, maybe you could be, you know, the dean of the hospital, right? But still at home, you're supposed to be meeker, more subservient, more adjusting, right? That is the word of the South Asian, adjusting. We just have to adjust as women and sort of protect the man's ego.
Why are you talking about me?
I'm talking about me.
The old me. This right. is exactly it. I was like attending first. Like I was the one, you know, like the dual physician household here. And I still took care of everything because everything. I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Protect the man's ego, which sadly is doing a disservice, yes, clearly to the woman, but also to the man. Because this is not going to be sustainable, right? It's not sustainable. No wonder families are getting fractured because it's not sustainable for the woman, but nor is it sustainable for the man. And so this sort of like, I often say, if a man is supposedly so strong, why are we treating him with such kid gloves?
Yeah.
He can't be that strong if we're treating his ego with such kid gloves. Come on, guys. That means that there's more fragility there.
Mm-hmm.
than in the system surrounding it. That's why we're having to shore it up so much, right? So people come to me with this, they've been in this system for decades and they've set up their homes as almost a replica of their parents' homes, even though their individual lives are about high achievement and they can like, you know, run team meetings and run whole departments, but then they come home and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know, should I say this, should I say that? They keep their truth to themselves. When it does come out, it finally bursts and there's, it's more arguing. And then we brush it all under the carpet because we don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Nothing is resolved. So we brush it under the carpet and try again to be the good Indian wife or the good whatever, right? And we ask for advice from our moms and our sisters who are also steeped in this,
mm-hmm.
who are going to actually just say, you need to, you know, you speak your mind too much, you're a little bit too aggressive, you're too this, you're too that, you need to be, did you know if I had been like this, I couldn't have survived with your dad. Yeah. Is that a compliment? No, it's not a mm-hmm. compliment that you had to survive something like that. So I think when people come to me, first thing is actually finding themselves in all this noise.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like when you say that, like what comes up for me is I call this the pressure cooker effect.
Yes.
Right? Because like they've been like holding it in. And then when they explode, it's not really the way that they want to
yes.
communicate and express themselves, but because it's just like you've reached the tipping point, yes. they like explode. And then there's like, oh, the shame and whatever. Oh, I said these things and, you know, yeah. and then whatever you've said gets caught onto
yes.
know, by the partner. Yeah. Oh, you said this. I've had a lot of people come to me recently about like, I don't want to be in this roller coaster ride.
Yes. That's exactly right. And in fact, you end up, like you said, when the pressure cooker finally bursts, it causes such noise and reaction that you are deemed and you yourself think that you're the crazy one.
Yeah. That there's a lot of self-judgment and yes. shame.
What is wrong with me? Why am I yelling every few weeks like this? Mm-hmm. Dude, it's because what's happening in between the yelling episodes, that's where the work needs to be.
Yeah. I think the most important thing is to like love and accept yourself where you are because you're doing the best that you can, yes. right? And it's okay to want something different just because you've accepted this or created this for yourself for the last 3-4 decades, right? And I have this thing that I talk to my clients about. It's like around 40, we get like the awakening.
Yes.
And
capital T. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm turning 42 in October, but truly like I've had like such an amazing shift. So any shifts for you?
Oh, it's ongoing. I would say I was a teenager until I was about 35. So I really did not, I was very late in my mental and emotional maturity because I literally was not given the tools and I was surviving day to day and I was able to survive because I succeeded.
So yeah. What would you, and like we're coming towards the end of this, what message would you like to give like the audience about like trauma, generational trauma? Like what is your like mod or whatever you want to share?
I want to say that this day and age, if you're listening to this podcast, you have the resources available to you. If you have access to the internet, if you're able to listen to a podcast, you have more resources than any generation previous to us did, which comes with it responsibility too, right? And so for me, I think of it as if I want to be, I can be the lever that shifts the story in this intergenerational narrative. But that also means that I have to do something different than I've ever seen inside of my primary circle. So one of the things that I think I share with my clients a lot, and I want to share with whoever is listening now, is start creating a primary circle that is not only the primary circle that you grew up with. Start creating a primary circle that is of people doing things that feel a little risky to them. It may not be like, maybe you're thinking about your relationship. It doesn't have to be that you create another primary circle of people who are also doing shifts in their relationship. It could be that they are doing shifts in their career or doing shifts in, but they're shifting and they're taking that little risk. Start creating a primary circle of people who are doing that as well, so that you have a different baseline to lean against for making changes in your own life. Because if you're going to be the lever in this of change in this intergenerational story, you will have to do things that are a little bit risky and feel different than anything that you've known. So you have to create a new known.
Mm-hmm.
And second, if you want your children, because often we talk about our children and legacy, if you want your children, if we ask any parent, we will say we want our children to live their truth.
Yes.
No?
So important.
So important. But you have a truth.
Yeah.
And your truth matters. And you can never have your children feel like they can live the truth when they can sense that you are swallowing yours.
Yeah, 100%. Because they see what you do, not what you say, right?
100%. So you can read all the books and give them all the advice in the world. But if they sense that you swallow your truth, that is what you're passing on. Not the books, it is how they see you live. So find your truth and find a new normal that you can lean against to start exploring that truth and taking risks.
So what I'm hearing from you is like, and this is what I have always felt for myself and my clients, is like the importance of community and connection,
yes,
right? And to have supporting, and I say, for me, women, you know, and I feel like, you know, and I actually have a lot of, one of my oldest, bestest friends is, you know, he's male. But like majority of them, it's like, I know there's like, they identify as women who have struggled, who are all struggling too, right? And I think we normalize that this is how we have lived our life and that we want something new and, yes, different. And I think my kids, and I'm gonna tell you that they see me, like, I went from like stay-at-home mom for like a couple of years, like, you know, and my husband's training and all the things, but then like working clinic a lot, you know, and mm-hmm. then like now they're like, okay, you see patients, mommy, sometimes, because I have my integrative pediatric practice. And they're like, oh, you see clients sometimes, and they get it. You know, they're like, you know what? I don't have to be in a box. And yeah, you know, my mom's not in a box and I don't have to be in a box.
Yes. Yes, we cannot sit in a box and feel that constraint of the box and then tell them to break, yes, down their boxes, yeah, right?
Yeah. And I just want to say, like, for people who are like me, who are like, oh, but what if we're in a relationship or in a long-term marriage, whatever it is, that the two people are different. Like, and I think like this has been really helpful for me to understand is like, especially in the coaching work that I do, it's like you can still create change and shift in your life, irregardless of how the other person shows up in the relationship.
100%.
Like that has been the most magical thing for me, because I have created a new life for myself, but there has been almost minimal change, you know, in the people around me. And That's okay. Yeah. And I have to tell you, like, this has been kind of like, you know, the most amazing year, but I've had different people in different spaces, like in my coaching space, in my medical space and stuff like that. Randomly, they'll come up to me. They're like, Bal, you're so different now.
Yeah.
Like your energy is different. You just like are so magical in so many ways. And I was like, I didn't even see anything, but they're like, it's the way that you show up. And I'm like, it's because of the work that I've done. And so anyone who has doubting or questioning if this is right for you, like what I want to say is like, reach out to us, like find out, you know, like maybe it is a good fit. Maybe it's not. We're playing this dating game here. Right. Yeah. And so it's like, Kavita's the same way too. Like reach out, Justin. I'm going to put all her contact information in the show notes. But this has been like so fun to like, by the way, you guys, like there was no planning today. Like, I just want to tell you guys, this is how I keep it real. And I told her that I'm like, I'm all about like, be authentic, whatever comes out.
Yes.
If there is someone at my door ringing the doorbell, it's fine. There is actually, and I had to be like, hold on for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's all good. This is human.
Yes. And you know what? I could talk to you all day, every day about this and about anything. I mean, that I think comes across that we just enjoy chatting with each other and sharing our journeys and our perspectives. So yes, reach out. And here's the thing. I always say either it's a good fit or you're a good fit somewhere else, and I will point you in that direction.
Yeah. I do that all the time.
All the time.
I'm like, dude, I don't do couples, guys. Like, let's keep going.
Yeah.
I'll do that. All right, you guys. Thank you so much, Kavita. This was a lovely episode. I hope you guys have a lovely day. See you guys next time.
Hey, if you're ready to advocate for yourself by listening to your inner voice so you can live in freedom, wake up every day with purpose, and enjoy your work and family, check out my website at www.pileguile.com. On the website, you'll have the opportunity to join my program, sign up for a free workshop, or just check out my blog. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please tell a friend, leave a review, or just reach out. I'd love to hear from you.